Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Ime, yesterday his quote was, we're a basketball team, we're not a track team, we're not running from anybody. How much does that kind of embody this group?
I mean, he hit the nail on the head right there. We're not, you know, we never have been. I'm not going to choose today, any other day to start. So, I mean, I love the quote. We love it. You know, it fits perfect for us, who we are, our DNA, our identity. And not only that, it speaks for him as a coach, the coach he is, the player that he was when he played. You know, he takes that into the coaching as well. And when you got a coach like that, that has the same mentality as you, it's always a good thing to have. And like you said, we ain't a track team, we're a basketball team. And we're going to play whoever is put in front of us.
All right, back in the Causeway Street studio. Another episode of the Causeway Street podcast. I'm Josue Pavone. Joel Pavone's here. Sean Dutra is out. But we got Causeway Street's Zach Pelequin checking in. And the Celtics are moving on, man. Celtics, Bucks, round two after sweeping the Brooklyn Nets. That series went by so fast, I haven't even talked to you guys the last couple of weeks. That's how fast that shit went by. Man, this Celtics team continues to impress. What a dominating performance. We'll recap a bit. We'll look ahead to this Bucks series, of course. A lot of news coming out of the series. The biggest one is Chris Middleton, man. I mean, we didn't know for sure, but we got the scoop. What was it? The middle of the week. He's going to be out for the entire series. What does that mean for the Bucks? What does that mean for the Celtics? You know, it seems like the top teams in the East are all going through it one way or another. And the Celtics are going to look to capitalize here. Series starting off in Boston. Zach Pelequin, let's bring him in right now before we get into everything, because I got to hear his take about the whole Brooklyn Nets series, man. We haven't talked to Zach in a while. And I feel like we put Zach on like every 2 or 3 weeks, you know, for the check-in. And I feel like the last one, he was so positive that I don't even think he saw this one coming, though. Like, he's very positive about the Celtics and the whole turnaround throughout the whole stretch. But Zach, what did you make of this series against the Nets? Did you expect that? I mean, did you expect that type of dominating from the Celtics?
Well, I guess my initial reaction is, what series? it was over in a matter of what? A couple of days, it felt like.
Less than a week.
No, I mean, yeah, less than, exactly. It was days. It was a pretty quick one. But no, I mean, listen, the main takeaway for me in this one is that this team's locked in. They're focused. I mean, we could sit here and talk all day about, you know, the Brooklyn team and Kyrie and the Durant story and everything that goes along with the different dynamics of the series. But what that showed me was much more about the Celtics than it was instead of Brooklyn. You know, it shows you a team that is incredibly focused. And for me, the more I thought about it, I mean, this was really the first success in the playoffs that Tatum and Brown and Smart and that core has had on their own. Because even if you went back to the bubble, you had Gordon Hayward, you had Kemba, you know, for whatever that was worth. And those guys were the veterans. They had a level of, you know, respect throughout the league. This is the first time, you know, and I'll tell you what, Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown and Marcus Smart. Yes, I'm saying it. Even Marcus Smart, these guys looked incredibly focused. And it looks like a team that might be on a little bit of a mission right now. So it was very, very good. And, you know, for them to dominate in that way, even though they were, for the most part, pretty competitive games, Yeah, that told me that like you said, it was even beyond my wildest imagination. I thought that they were going to have a pretty good shot to come out, but at the end of the day, I did not expect a sweep, and in that fashion, that was very impressive.
Yeah, the last time we spoke was right after the trade deadline, right? You know, we were like, we called it the Derek White era, right? and the fact that like they're already starting to turn things around at that point. But from the trade deadline on, it's just been, like you said, they're just focused. And as much as I wanted to say it was going to be a sweep in the first round, because I was pretty sure Deutsch was going to say it, but I didn't want to go like, you know, two guys saying the sweep. But I just felt like they were catching Brooklyn at the right time. And the dominance that I saw on KD, I've never seen that played by any other team. What do you think, like, went into that? Was it Ime? Was it a combination of getting back at after what happened last season? Like, what do you think went into like this whole mindset in that first round?
Well, I think there's a lot of things. It's not just one thing. Kemba moving on, I think, was kind of that opening of the door of, okay, there's no other former All-Star on that team at that point when they made that deal. And that was the first time that I think that I felt that, hey, the keys have 100% been handed off to Tatum and Brown. And at that juncture, it's their team, you know, and I think there is, and that's what's so encouraging out of all of this is that between those two guys and Marcus Smart, every time I say it, I like have to stop myself and be like, wow, you're actually saying this right now. But
you want him traded. You want him dealt.
I've spent the last 2 years thinking like, why is this guy still here? But man, he's turned it around.
No,
he's
but you did. Hold on, real quick though. You did say, look, if they're not going to get rid of this guy, then give him the fucking keys. That's what you were saying. Yes. Essentially, you're like, yep, if they're not getting rid of this guy, give him another role. Give him the main role.
Beginning of the year, I said, if you want him to be a big part of this team, he's got to be a point guard, and you got to treat him as such. And they did, and right, that is, I think, been a big part of the turnaround. But yeah, I mean,
yeah, but see, that was the thing, though. Like, hold on, real quick. I just want to get this in real quick because look, people can say what they want about Marcus, whichever side of the argument you were, but no one can say with a straight face that, oh, he's got to go just because. I mean, like, honestly,
just cause,
like, listen, he got the keys. Let him finish a whole year. Can he get a whole season? I mean, the longest tenure Celtic, the heart and soul of the team, the backbone of your defense. That was my only thing.
Look, official captain.
Let's give him a whole season, and then we'll recap and we'll dissect it, and we'll decide if this team should move forward with or without him. You know, and look, before the season even ended, he checked all the boxes, and now he's the story, somewhat of the makeup of this team, the identity of this team.
Yeah, for sure. And then, like I was saying, I mean, between Brown, Tatum, and Smart kind of understanding that this team was now very much in their hands, I think, like you said, the Marcus Smart aspect of this, again, it blows my mind, but his turnaround after New Year, when he came back from that injury, the story that came out that he went to all of his teammates, he said, guys, I love playing with you. We got to find a way through this. He's like, I'm going to do whatever it takes. That might have been the pivotal moment of the season, because it felt like about a week later, that team changed 100%. It went from a team that was, you know, win one, lose two, win one, you know, whatever, to a team that was just flat out dominant and has been ever since then. And I think Smart and this was the first time everyone will always say, oh yeah, leadership. That was the first time that I thought he truly took over and said, I'm going to be a leader. And it's not going to be because I'm yelling at guys or anything like that. It's going to be because you know that I'm here to do whatever it takes to win. And I think that whole entire mindset for the team changed. And I can't say whether or not something happened with Udoka being, you know, someone who's become an incredibly trusted coach for these guys, where it looks like they look to him, you know, with no questions. It feels like that group and the camaraderie that they built in the second half of this season, honestly, I mean, I don't see another team in the NBA right now that I fear that this team cannot step up and take care of. And I think going back to the Brooklyn series real quick, they had some adverse moments. Game two, they were down. Brooklyn had that. They should have won that game. And this team said, you know what? I don't care if we're down 17, you know, 18, whatever it was. We're going to turn this thing around. We're going to keep on, you know, battling whatever it takes, you know, whether it's, you know, being able to defend a little bit better, rebound the ball, which they did an excellent job in this series. But they were, you know, they took on the adversity head on and they played incredibly well. And I think that that's kind of their personality versus what you saw a year ago, where they had, you know, as soon as it got tough, they fell apart. this year is the polar opposite, and it is a very encouraging sign for me, not only for the run that they could potentially have this year, but the next couple of years, it looks really good.
What's next for Brooklyn, Zach? Before we put them to rest for the offseason, before we send them on fishing, what's next for this organization? If you're
Cancun on three.
Yeah, 1, 2, 3. Yeah, before, you know, we don't have to talk about these guys for the next like 3-4 months. So let's send them on their way. But what's next for this organization? How do they fix this?
Well, their biggest thing is they got to figure out Ben Simmons, because if you don't have Simmons on the floor playing basketball and not being a complete and utter head case, I mean, it's kind of, you know, you're stuck. You got $100+ million, or you might even have close to $200 million contract. Ugh. That doesn't allow you any movement anywhere else to improve.
What a circus act. What was that? Like, what was that? In your opinion, was that like his agent putting out false information versus the organization? Like the whole, he may play, he's going to play at some point, he's not going to play at all. Like, what? Why did that happen?
I'll tell you what. And I was kind of like cavalier about the whole thing, in a sense that, you know, there was like, oh, mental health. I was like, oh, bullshit. He just doesn't want to play in Philly. And then he got the trade, and I was like, okay, he'll be back like in a week. And then he was working out, and he was kind of on his way back. And then he just ended up not playing at all. And I'll be honest, I actually do think there is something going on with him when it comes to like mental health, whether it's like, quote unquote, the yips when it comes to shooting, and now it's in his head or whatever. I but he's got to sort that stuff out, because it'd be a real tragedy for him not to get back on the court, even though I don't really like him personally, but you know, whatever. But I mean, you do want to see him get back on the court and get back into, you know, being what he was a couple of years ago, which was an excellent player. But if they don't get him back, and if they don't get what Ben Simmons was, you know, 2 and 3 years ago back, that team is in a load of trouble, because Kyrie, we know what he is. He's an enigma. You know, he's going to have some days where he's, you know, one of the best players in the game. He's going to have other days where he just completely checks out. And Kevin Durant isn't getting any younger. I mean, he's going to be, what, 33, 34? Those legs didn't look very energetic through most of that series. So that's going to be really tough for them.
Yeah, but if you're Brooklyn, though, you know, Kyrie has an opportunity to opt out and then renegotiate. Are you renegotiating with this guy long term?
Yeah, I mean, I almost think they have to. But I think there's going to be the conversation that Brooklyn's going to have to turn to Kevin Durant and say, hey, are you here, you know, for the next several years? Or are you, you know, are you jetting on us? You know, what do you want to play with Kyrie? And I think there is a good relationship between those two. So at the end of the day, I think you kind of have to keep the two stars together. Hope your third star comes back and comes back the way that you know that he can. And, you know, build around that core. You know, that's really all they can do. And let's not kid ourselves here. If those guys are right, if those guys are playing the way that they're capable of, all three of them, that's still a really freaking good core. It's you know, that those guys can play ball. All those guys are all-star, all NBA level players. And, you know, I just don't see any way that you kind of shy away from that. Now, I know the whole entire COVID thing and the vaccination and all that was a little troubling. I think the only question they have to have, you know, for themselves is, do you think, you know, trying to have some foresight, do they think that that's going to be an issue going forward? Because you can't have Kyrie Irving playing, you know, 25, 30 games a year. That's just not enough. But if they can put that aside, yeah, I think you got to find a way to get him back and make it work.
I don't know, man. That's tough, man. That's a lot of money with between those three guys. And,
oh, yeah.
And you know, how much more can you add to this team already? Like they had, I remember in the offseason, I felt like everybody was going there. They were like,
oh yeah,
all these, you know, these savvy veterans are just like, no, I don't care. I don't care what I get paid. I'm going to Brooklyn.
But see, that's the thing though. Like that old recipe of get your three max guys and fill out the roster with whoever wants to come join. Like those days are over. I feel like the rest of the NBA is caught up this season in particular, or you can in some aspects, you could say it started last year with the Bucks winning it all. I just feel like those days are over. Like you have to have depth, you have to have shooting, you have to have quality players surrounding those guys, and you can't just go out and get those veterans like the Carmelo Anthonys to fill out your roster, or the, you know, the Goran Dragic, you know what I mean? Like those guys that are going to take small, you know, they're going to come on 1 year deals and not ask for a whole lot of money, and because you don't have that to offer them. Like, no, nowadays I think teams have to have those guys that were built from the bottom, guys that were been in the league for a few years, you know, they've carved out a role for themselves, they know what to do for that team. Like, look what the Celtics are doing right now. I mean, they have guys like that have been implemented, and it wasn't, they're on to like plan C and D at this point, but you know, it's worked out for them, you know. Like, yeah. I just don't see a team like the Brooklyn Nets doing it that way. Unless it's guys like Bruce Brown that come up, unless it's guys that you trade for, like a third year guy who's young, who has a ceiling above them. You know, you can't get these guys that are already over the hill and you're just looking for production off the bench. I think you found out in this year in a big way that when their number is called, they're not going to always be there for you. You know, they're not going to always be able to contribute because their prime years are way past them.
Or you might not want to trade away your draft picks.
That's not good either.
Exactly what I was just thinking.
That's not good either.
Because I mean, before they traded for James Harden last season, you had Jared Allen, all-star. Yep. All right. Yep. You had Caris LeVert.
Caris LeVert.
He was on the verge of being an all-star before he got injured.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know what I'm saying? Like you had a couple of good pieces that like were part of your.
Ask the Lakers; they know what this is about.
Yeah, you had a couple of good pieces, and you had a decent coach before you decided to bring on Steve Nash. So I don't know. If you ask me, they literally put all their eggs into one basket. They're like, oh no! Like all of a sudden, we need a third All Star.
Yeah, but you know,
or superstar, whatever.
But you know what they're also thinking, Joel? They're also thinking, well, if this damn COVID thing wasn't going on, you know, if Kyrie could have played, then things would have been different. We just needed that time to gel. But at the same time, where's the accountability? Where's the accountability in Kyrie saying, like, yeah, look, I made this decision and I know it didn't help the team and us trying to figure things out, but I did what I did. I think that's the part that kind of annoyed me the most after everything was all said and done. You know, Kyrie and KD talking about the issues and the hurdles and them not having enough time. I'm like, well, Kyrie, you're a big part of that as well. Like, hold yourself accountable. I mean, look.
James Harden walked out the door because of you,
bro. We've been covering the Celtics all season long. I mean, that's the theme of this season, accountability, damn it. That's what Ime's been doing with these guys and sort of what started this whole damn thing, this whole run for the Celtics.
Essentially, they picked Steve Nash over Udoka.
You don't think Ime's looking at it that way? Ime was like, I'm serious, guys. Bring on the Nets. I'll take care of those guys. Trust me.
Everybody's playing against Memphis. Fuck it.
I got the game plan. Yeah, right? Everyone's fucking playing. This is a playoff game, damn it. We don't run away from anybody, you know?
For sure. No, and just one last thing on Brooklyn. I think both of you guys are right on. There's kind of a renaissance in the NBA where the draft is being used, I think, a little bit more, being leaned on a little bit more, a lot of self-development for teams than we've seen over the last 10 years. You know, we kind of, you know, going all the way back to probably, you know, 2011, 2012, and the whole entire, you know, Miami LeBron team, you know, we kind of saw the NBA switch to a free agent, you know, kind of building mentality where you're going out there. And like you said, you're getting those 3 stars or 4 stars if you can. And everyone kind of seemed to gravitate to that. You had 2 or 3 teams a year that were really good and had their 3 stars. And, you know, that was kind of it. And now I think you're seeing, like, especially the last couple of years, the Phoenix Suns of the world, the Celtics, right. Toronto a couple of years ago,
even the Bucks,
even the Warriors,
their
main core has been together for legit like 5-6 years.
Homegrown.
That's homegrown.
Yep, you're seeing a lot more of that. And I think Brooklyn does have a little bit of an issue there because, I mean, how many drafts have they just opted out of with all of this, you know,
for
with
this fantasy team? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's going to end up hurting him because I think Kevin Durant is, I don't know how much more those legs have. You know, I'm not saying that he's done, but he's starting to go into that kind of that LeBron level where, yeah, he's going to give you 50, 60 really good games, but he's going to have a couple of games where he labors through. And if he's not feeling good and healthy coming up to the end of the season, going into the playoffs, this is what you're going to get. You're going to get, you know, a diminished Kevin Durant who's not going to be able to carry the offensive load. And then you got to say, okay, well, can Ben Simmons go get us 30? I mean, not in the mindset that he's in right now. So, yeah, it's interesting. And then, I would also agree, accountability being the theme of the year and a very, very quiet leader in all of this that we have. I mean, I know I haven't really said much about him, but Al Horford coming back, I don't think that can be understated, what he's done to come back in there, set that locker room. And you can tell there is just a huge respect between Tatum and Brown and Marcus Smart, Robert Williams, that whole team, all those young guys, they know Al, they trust Al, and he is definitely he's that quiet leader. You know, he's that guy that they're like, you know what, as you would like, sir, you tell us what we need and we'll go do it. And I think that there's definitely a level of respect there that has helped this team kind of focus in the way that they've needed to.
Papa Horford.
Yeah. No, for sure. No, he's definitely been that guy. And he's a big part of this as well. I mean, there's so many pieces to this. And the Celtics now moving from one superstar to another, you know, from you know, putting the defensive clamps on one of the greatest scorers of all time and Kevin Durant to the man of the league, if you ask me, the face of the league, rather, if you ask me. And that's Giannis Antetokounmpo. I mean, going into this series, it's going to be interesting to see how the Celtics is going to defend him. Obviously, this is a different kind of score when we're talking about when we compared it to much younger, you know, force that can put up big points in a hurry, also can pass. You know, we know the kind of player that he is. But now that the Bucks are going to be in the series without their other all-star and Chris Middleton, you know, the grade two sprain to his left MCL, how much weight does that hold in the series to you, in your opinion, Zach? I mean, the Celtics going into this one are clearly favorites here, but is it as easy as, oh, well, you know, they can't make up that production that Middleton's going to, that they'll miss from Middleton? Or, you know, how do you see this series play out between the Celtics and Bucks? Like, how much easier does it get for the Celtics, I guess, is my question.
You know, I don't want to get too excited, but I think it really changes things, you know, drastically going into this, because I think if they had Middleton, now you're looking at a team that's got their core. They've got the experience, you know, they are the defending champions. You know, I think that would have been a pretty big ask, you know, and Milwaukee was the team that I looked at going into the playoffs. I said, well, you know, if you get through Brooklyn, which I thought was, you know, it was realistic. I thought that there was something that they could do. I think if you run to Milwaukee, you might be playing the best team in the Eastern Conference in the second round. And that was going to be the series that really, I think, was, you know, that one's going to seven. You know, we'll see what happens. And, you know, maybe we come out, maybe we don't. But I think with Chris Middleton out, I think the scales definitely tip towards Boston. Because here's the thing. They're going to be able to roll 2, 3, 4 different bodies at Giannis. Giannis is going to have to come every single night with 30, 40, maybe even 50 points to keep that offense going in the direction that it needs to. And I think, you know, Drew Holiday, great player. You know, he's a very strong player as well. But I don't see him as a guy that's going to be able to pick up that offensive slack that's going to be laid down by not having Middleton. If Milwaukee is to come out of it and win this series, they are going to have several guys step up on the bench, you know, other guys in that starting lineup that are going to have to step up and take on a scoring role. And honestly, I don't know where they're going to get that. So I think this is a huge, huge shift for Boston. And honestly, I think, it wouldn't surprise me if they took it in five, maybe they were able to kind of run through them a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, you know, when you have, someone like Middleton, that's not going to be in the lineup. Like he's been a Celtics killer in the past. This is undeniable, right? Mm-hmm. And obviously he's been the Milwaukee's number two for X amount of years now. Great shooter, great scorer. But yeah, I kind of agree with Zach here. Like you're going to have to ask a lot from Drew Holiday, Freeman players like, you know, Bobby Portis, Grayson Allen. Like these players are going to have to like step up, you know, shooting wise, scoring wise, because it can't be Antetokounmpo dropping 40 in, you know, 5 or 6 games. He's capable of it, but the way the Celtics are playing defense, and I get it, you know, Antetokounmpo is not like Durant, where Durant, we've seen in the past, is able to come down the court, pull up, you know, create his own shot. Like Antetokounmpo, for the most part, you worry more about him just getting to the hoop. Like in 2 steps, he's from the top of the key into, you know, dunking that, you know, barreling down the lane there. But if you tire him out and you're constantly on the perimeter making sure that these shooters are not open, or you're making them work on defense, then, I mean, I have to agree with Zach. I was, you know, leaning towards the, you know, 5, maybe 6 games that the Celtics can take care of the Bucks in. But I'm also worried about Jaylen Brown, his hamstring. Mm. I'm worried about Robert Williams. I don't like the way Robert Williams looked in game 4. I get it, the Celtics won, and they could have won without Robert Williams playing in those 2 games, but he needed the reps. I don't know. Like if those two are right, if everybody's healthy on the Celtics, and Celtics can definitely win this in 5 or 6 games. But if they're not, if there's a game or two where, you know, that hammy is bothering Brown, that's going to affect them big time.
No, I agree, and that's why, you know, unfortunately, we didn't get to talk about it prior to, but winning that Brooklyn series in a sweep fashion, for them to get these couple of days or this week off to kind of heal up and get ready to go, I don't think you can understate how important that is. You know, and I think for Robert Williams to have an extra 4 or 5 days to be able to kind of get that knee back to where it needs to be. And now I think we're going to see him without a minutes restriction. I think he comes into the series and he's going to be ready to go, assuming the health is fine. I think he's going to be ready to go. The Jaylen Brown situation is a little concerning. It seemed like he was able to battle through it throughout the Brooklyn series. I'm not 100% sure when it happened. I mean, was it a game four thing?
Game four. He said he was having some issues in the second half of game four. And, you know, he did his thing. He took over that fourth quarter. So he did battle through it, but it's different, you know, one game or a half rather than the whole series, you know?
Yeah. So we'll see. I mean, but I think the fact that they swept that series, that it can't be understated how quietly important that was to get them a little extra time here. But again, I still think that as long as there's nothing terminal with the injuries, we're going to see those guys out there. And the beauty of the Celtics team is they've got a few bodies that they can roll out there. You know, Grant Williams played incredibly well at times in that Brooklyn series. He's playing as confident as he has all year long. So now you roll him out there to be able to get some time for Jaylen. You know, Peyton Pritchard in streaks, you know, 5 minute, 7 minute runs was excellent for them. And Derek White, you know, maybe this is a series where we see Derek White really take that step up from, you know, being a good solid sixth man to being a guy that maybe can take on a little bit more in the series. So that's what I love about this Boston team. I mean, they're rolling nine deep and now with Williams back, you know, potentially as many as 10 deep, whereas Milwaukee, you're going to take Giannis off the court. What do you think that lineup's going to look like? You know, especially with Bill Middleton, like they're kind of stuck. They've got to have their top guys out there and taking on, shouldering, you know, the burden of whatever that scoring that they're going to lose with Middleton being out going, you know, what that's going to be. Whereas Boston, I think, is actually going to be able to kind of be a little bit more deliberate. You know, Udoka's going to be able to kind of play with his lineups and matchups to kind of make things work. But, you know, I still feel good. I can't hide it, man. And I think, you know, even looking beyond that, like I said, there's really no other team, even in the Western Conference, that I sit here and say that if Boston is good and healthy, this could be this. You know, it's still early, but you know, this could be the year where they kind of make that sneaky run and get a shot to be able to do something big.
Yeah, I'm with you guys. I mean, listen, the Milwaukee Bucks not having Middleton, it changes everything. It does. I mean, you can't
defensively, yeah.
like Marcus, he's got to give you the PR answer and say like, oh, that doesn't change, but it does. It does. I mean, especially when we're talking about Middleton, man, he's the Celtics killer, especially in the playoffs. And it didn't matter whether he was in Milwaukee or he was in Boston. He loves TD Garden. Yeah, like he will score six threes on you at TD Garden any night, and not having that changes everything. But listen, if this team does get into a shootout with the Celtics, I think if you're Milwaukee, that's sort of what you want to happen, right? I mean, if these guys get going, it can get tough. Like we've seen the Celtics team when you going up against them, if you score a lot of threes on the Celtics, it can really open the floor, and that's how you sort of you start to build momentum, and especially on defense too. And Giannis is the lead of that, you know, for the Bucks. So that's the only two things that I'm going to keep my eye on, shooting. Listen, I know there's no Middleton here, but one of these guys can drop 6 3-pointers too. You know, whether it's Connaughton, the hometown guy, or whether it's Grayson Allen, who everyone's going to hate if Celtics fans don't already dislike him. And then you have that toughness, right? I think that's another thing here that goes that plays a part of their defense. It was the only thing that Brooklyn could talk about. I feel like after every loss, all the physicality, these guys are very physical with us. I mean, we saw that with what they did with Durant. So, I mean, outside of those, the defense and them getting hot from behind the arc, I mean, I just think that's what should scare the Celtics the most. But if they play their game, if they continue to play defense the way they've been playing, I also like the Celtics' chances in this.
That and moving the ball. Like, the, yeah. You know, that those 25, 26, 27 assists that they get, you know, that seems like, you know, on a nightly basis, that really makes the defense work, you know, for opponents. And yeah, it's going to be a great series.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I was just looking up some stats for the Bucks. And again, I mean, the supporting cast outside of Giannis, outside of Drew Holiday, I mean, no Middleton. That is, it's massive. It's absolutely massive. You got Brook Lopez. You think he's going to win a series? You're going to be able to put put 20 points. Yeah.
Well, know, according to Chuck, he's going to be the X factor.
Oh, hold on, Zach. I don't know if you remember this about 2 years ago when I talked about them picking up Brook Lopez. You couldn't stop laughing. But listen, his tenure in Milwaukee, he's been solid. Like for what you solid. Need out of Brook Lopez, he's been Brook Lopez for you. But your point still stands. I get what you're saying.
I mean, he's a 7-footer who rebounds, what, 4 boards a night? Like, it's like, come on.
He's a 3-point shooter. He's a threat. He's a threat on the perimeter.
You know that's not why they grabbed him, though. Exactly. They didn't grab him for his damn rebounding.
Yeah. Well, Grayson Allen. And then actually a sneaky guy that I feel like does play well against Boston and seems to rub a lot of our guys the wrong way is Bobby Portis. Someone to keep in mind, but you know he always seems to kind of have a little bit of an edge to his game, and he seems to show up when they play against Boston. So
yeah, they're going
to
be chippy. They're going to be chippy. I'm telling you, we might see a fight. I think it's going to happen.
I hope so. Marcus finally start throwing those anvils, baby.
Oh yeah, that's what being the defensive player of the year is about, in a sense, right?
Deep boy,
ready to scrap.
D-boy.
No, I can't D-boy. Wait. I can't wait. Well, Zach, we appreciate you stopping by. We'll check in with you middle of the series for sure. Yeah, let everybody know where they can find you on Twitter, man. I'm sure you'll be tweeting up a storm throughout the series.
Oh, that's my favorite place.
Get at him.
Having fun with these guys.
My favorite place to be at OTW Sports Radio. I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be a fun series. You know, obviously, you're playing the best player in the league right now and a generational guy too. You know, he's a generational player that I think is certainly going to keep, no matter what happens, they're going to keep Milwaukee in the fight. Obviously, Drew Holiday, the Marcus Smart comparisons at times, and you know, being a all-star level player, very, very good players. But man, our green team, they're rolling.
So I don't know if you feel the same way. I don't think the Celtics have played their best basketball yet. Like they would
no, yeah. I mean, they have not played
at maybe least game one. Maybe game one.
We did not see, in my opinion, a full 48. But that's the thing. Like I think the resiliency that we saw in a couple of those games, and the fact that they did not back down, even going as far back as the fact that they were willing to get that second seed, that tells me a lot. Because now Milwaukee has to look themselves in the mirror and say, "Shit, these guys didn't, you know, try to get away from this Brooklyn team. They went out, they punched them in the mouth." And now they're coming for us. So
yeah.
We'll see where it ends up. But I'm looking forward to it. Game
it's
one.
Path, it's the path they chose. And I like how Marcus brought that up too after practice this week. He's like, hey, listen, this is they picked this route. They're the defending champ. They have all the rights to, but they had that in mind that they're going to face us and they're okay with that. Well, all right, well, let's go.
Yeah, right.
let's see if you made the right choice.
Yeah, the team's confidence right now is at an all-time high. They've figured out late game execution and yeah, if they can put it together, like you said, yeah, this is going to be a good one.
All right, Zach, we'll talk to you soon, man.
Sounds good. Thank you, gentlemen.
Take care, brother.
This episode of the Causeway Street Podcast is brought to you by BetOnline.ag. Our partners at BetOnline continue to be the number one source for all your betting needs and sports info. Find all the latest sports developments, including updated odds on the playoffs, fights, and even the next season futures. And don't forget that baseball is back and the start of the Major League Baseball season is finally here. BetOnline is your continued source for all your sports wagering needs, including live betting and your favorite Vegas casino and poker games. It's super easy to get started, so head to the website today or use your mobile device to join and use our promo code CLNS50 to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, where the game starts. Yeah, I love that Marcus said that, man. I love it because it speaks volumes. And again, and we were saying this about a month ago or right after the regular season ended, it would just, if the Celtics had done the same thing, it would go against what Ime's been preaching, what the team's been about, and which is they're not afraid of anyone. They're the best team, they're the best defensive team in the NBA. They're out going for the crown. They're going for the championship. And what kind of message would that send to the rest of the Eastern Conference or shit? What kind of message would that send to everyone in the locker room if they dodged facing the Brooklyn in the first round, right? What kind of, just think about the confidence boost that it was and them beating the Nets, let alone sweeping them. Like, this team's confidence at an all time high. And I don't think you get that. I don't think you get the same kind of focus, the same kind of production if you were a team that dodged the, dodge the Nets just so you can for a matchup against the Raptors or any other team for that matter. Just dodging a team would have sent a terrible message, and you would have been preventing your team from reaching where they are right now.
Yeah, it's clear where their mindset is at. You know, Ime has said it, you know, repeatedly, but he said it in particular this week after, I think it was a Tuesday or Wednesday's practice. Like, we're not a track team. We ain't running from nobody. Mm-hmm. Like, we're ready. Bring on whoever, and we're going to prepare, and we're going to play, you know, our brand of basketball. And that's what they've been doing. It's been good. It's been good to watch.
And you know, it's a little personal. Like, you said it too. Like, I mean, you said it perfectly about going up against his former team. Cause you know, last year he must have been like, nah, Steve, we shouldn't be doing that. Or he must have been like, I mean, I don't know. Maybe he wasn't like that, but you knew going into this, he's like, I'm going to win this matchup big time. Like, I got this guy. I know Steve Nash. Like, you know, I'm going to make it really hard for him, but I don't even think he expected this sweep. Like, he must have also surprised himself as well.
That, and I think the fact that the way they played in the first two games, and then to have, you know, Robert Williams ready to go in game 3 and 4, even right. though he wasn't saying it outright, like, yeah, he's coming on the trip.
Meanwhile, Steve is making no adjustments.
None whatsoever. None. So he's like,
no adjustments.
He's like, if I see a chance to sweep this team, I'm not going to fucking, you know, lose that opportunity.
This was all about Durant's going to save the day at some point. You know what I mean? Like, I felt like that was Nash's approach, well, Kyrie as well, but like, it's just like, these guys are going to figure it out. I just thought there were times for him to make adjustments, and he didn't. And when he did, it was just like the second half of throwing, you know, Blake Griffin in there, you know, like there was no a different approach from the very beginning. They it was started, like he was just doing this stuff on the fly.
Yeah, they started Claxton versus Andre Drummond. You could see, Andre Drummond looked so pissed off in that last game.
Dragic gives you 17 in game two. He plays 7 minutes in game three. Like, I don't know, man. His stuff was all over the place. But he may smell. He smelled blood. I honestly do. I feel like he smelled blood. He's like, oh, you don't think Rob's gonna make a difference? Like, you know what I mean? Like, just notebook, just locker room material for him to put on the wall for his players, man. I swear.
Not just like, yeah, about that.
All right, let's get into it in case you missed it. Playoff edition. Man, I haven't been here for a while, it feels like. So let's do it. I'm sure you got a lot to
dissect.
Well, a lot to catch up on, I guess. What we got?
In case you missed it. It's been, you know, one injury after another, especially with like all-star or superstar. The latest now, Philly. Joel Embiid. Ugh, news.
That's a big one, man.
According to ESPN. He will be out Joel Embiid's going to be out indefinitely after suffering what the team has called a right orbital fracture and mild concussion in Philly's game 6 win over the Toronto Raptors. That was on Thursday night. So this came out Friday that he was going to be out indefinitely. We don't know what that means, because more than likely that means he's going to miss game 1. But beyond that, it's anybody's guess, because obviously he's got to go into the league's concussion protocol. If he passes all that, you know, We've seen that here in Boston, you know, with like Al Horford, different players that they react differently to going through these protocols, right? What gets me is he suffered this injury with like 3 minutes to go in that game. Should he have been in that game when they were up by, you know, a good amount?
Yeah.
At that point. So is Doc Rivers, you know, kicking himself in the ass?
He should be. But I feel like he was doing that just to be on the safe side because of all this noise. I feel like he's kind of caused himself. I mean, like, come on, man. Like, clearly you're in your feelings, but you can't show that stuff, man. Like, you're a veteran coach. I mean, you clearly hit a nerve. All right.
I'm not blowing this lead.
You clearly hit a nerve. And I'm not saying that that's what led to him making this bad decision, but it probably doesn't help. You know, he's probably just like, let me just be on the safe side. But he should have pulled him. He shouldn't have been in the game.
Yeah. Siakam, he got hit with an offensive foul on Siakam. I do remember watching his interview with TNT right after the game when they showed the play, and then they're like, how you feeling? He was like, no, I think he broke my face. Mm-hmm. And they all started laughing. He's like, no, I'm serious. Like, you know, I get it, it's the playoffs or whatever, but we'll see how bad it is. And it turns out this is the worst that could have happened to Philly. I mean, after being up 3-0 in that series, having a battle the Raptors, and then this happens in a moment where I don't think he shouldn't have been in that game. And now you're going to Miami. You're going into the Miami's den.
Yeah.
So That's gonna. That's tough.
I still like them. I love Miami's chances in the series before this happened. So this doesn't help.
This doesn't help
Philly at all. No. I just think Miami's just a tougher team. Their depth is there. You know, James Harden just hasn't flipped that proverbial switch, so to speak. Right. I mean, you were hoping for that if you're a Sixers fan that he would do that in the postseason, but it just hasn't happened. And you look at the rest of the guys on that team, and sure, they have other players that can step up, but going up against the Miami Heat, man, like, look, that's the one team I feel like can match up well against the Celtics because of their depth and because of their shooting and because of, you know, their leadership. You know, I mean, that's a tough team to go up against. And if you don't have Embiid, you don't really have much of a shot, man. Let's just be honest.
Yeah, no, you don't.
Yeah, I mean, just got to be honest.
Unless James Harden is willing to revert to regular season Houston James Harden.
That's what's probably going to happen
today. That has to happen.
Yeah.
That has to happen. Like, and we haven't seen that in a while, never mind in the playoffs.
Yeah.
So it should be interesting. All right. And in case you missed it, obviously, we've talked a lot about the sweep of the Nets, and the nation, or the basketball world, so to speak, has been trying to figure out why the Nets lost instead of kind of giving the Celtics their due.
They're like, I noticed that too.
Like, what went into like the Nets colossal like collapse here in the series? And then obviously, you know, there's a ton of factors that they keep bringing up, but one main factor that they're also bringing up is Ben Simmons, because all these reports are coming out that Ben Simmons and Clutch and they're meeting with Nets higher ups, and they're trying to figure out, you know, the best like course of plan for him. Zach brought up a good point. You know, he thinks that he really is in his head at this point. Mm. Because, according to The Athletic, and I quote, for Nets players, the confusion was not centered around Ben Simmons' ailment, but with the perceived lack of attempt to play, a lack of effort to be in the uniform and push his body in these high stake playoffs, sources said. Nets players and coaches wanted to see Simmons show resolve and enter the series to start his own on court Brooklyn tenure. Even if it was for unlimited minutes in Monday's game four, or not at all, or at least dress for the game, end quote, which he didn't do. He was a no-show.
Yeah, but that's the part that I feel like was necessary. I don't know, because if I'm Steve Nash, I'm like, look, if you're not going to play, then we don't, like, what do we need you here for?
Well, I mean,
if you're not striving to do that, then what do we need you on the bench for? Like, yeah. What help are you doing? Or how are you helping yourself if you're not even, if that's not the course for you right now?
Yeah.
Like, if you're not going to play at all, just stay away.
Yeah, I mean, you can. Or at least Ben is probably going to point to Steve Nash talking all week or all series, every game after every practice, asking about Ben Simmons. Mm-hmm. And Nash, his response was the same. It's up to him. It's up to him if he wants to play. He got his wish. He wanted out of Philly, got traded. And then there was reports saying that because, you know, he was putting so much pressure on himself that it created a, you know, back issue. So it's like, wait a minute. So did you get a herniated disc? Mm. Did you injure yourself, you know, working out, or like what went into this? And essentially it's all in his head. He's not ready to play basketball mentally. So that's where the Nets are at when it comes to Ben Simmons. Obviously, this is going to be talked about probably all summer, because I remember Charles Barkley saying a bunch of times, you know, during the last offseason, like, yo, like, you can't get mad when you're getting paid almost $40 million a year when the team is actually just to work on your game. Mm. And yeah, he felt like he didn't need to do that. And there's been a history, you know, seeing all these things over the last like few days of how he quit on LSU, essentially. The Australian national team, you know, they're always, you know, ramping up that he was going to come join them. Yeah. And
here come the witnesses.
And they were, you know, they were like, yo, like, he would always say he's coming. And then, like, the last minute, like, for the FIBA, the World Cup, he backed out last minute.
It's never good when the other people start speaking. I'm like, well, he did the same shit to me.
Yeah, yeah. And for the Olympics, even though he didn't promise to play for the Olympics, but he promised to be a part of, like, those ramp-up games against, like, the U.S. Like, they were advertising, like, oh, it's Ben Simmons against Team USA. And then, of course, last minute, he backed out of that as well. So it's like, you know, Philly, obviously, we know all that. And now Brooklyn.
He said, nah, bro, that's not what it is.
So, you know, it's going to be a tough offseason for Brooklyn. I'm telling you that much, you know. And in case you missed it, you know, speaking of Brooklyn, you know, Kyrie.
No, we said we're done with Brooklyn, man. What's going on?
I'm sorry, but Kyrie Irving,
damn
right?
Damn it.
The reason why I'm bringing up Kyrie Irving again is because he's been kind of going on a little rant in the last few days after getting swept. I guess it's letting, I guess it's sinking in because like it didn't happen like right away.
Dude, go to the beach, man. Go to the island somewhere.
But you know, I know, right? Go to Coney Island, bro.
Put your phone down. Well, not that island.
I know. Get on a roller coaster, you know? But no, it gave
no fucking way. Yo, is that Kyrie Irving? Holy shit.
What the fuck happened, dude?
Kyrie in Coney Island.
You know, he gave himself their props, and you know, it's nothing but positivity. And then after that, it's just been one thing after another about how he's being portrayed in the media, right? Here's just one tweet of an example of the vibes, so to speak, here. And I quote, "Just watch all the people who wake up every day and report about people's lives on TV and social media and then profit off of them. Then they justify their jobs by saying they get paid to say how they feel. LOL. It's like these people live in a fantasy." End quote. The only person I see that's thinking they're living in a fantasy is this dude.
With this obsession with the fantasy reality thing, man. It's like, you're not above going to work, okay? Like, that's what this thing is at the end of the day. Like, yeah, no, people critiquing. Yeah, he
went in on it.
To the same thing. People critiquing you and the way you approach your job, that's their job. You may not like what they say, but that's their job. And it's not about tearing down. Like, oh, man. You can always spin the narrative your way as much as you want, Kyrie, but you're not going to fool people into thinking that you not going to work and being criticized for that isn't fair game, because it is. It is fair game. You don't go to work. You sign this contract. You show up for the when the mandate was removed, you show up when you know, more often. You can play the home games and you go to the playoffs and you didn't have a good performance and you just hard back onto all this into the criticism that you've received. When you know if things were the other way around, you wouldn't be saying all this. So it's like, that's just what you signed up for, man. Like, I don't understand the whole logic behind like trying to paint yourself as some sort of victim. Like, look, I know it can't be easy. I'm sure it's not. I mean, to hear your name be criticized for this, that, you know, but again, this is what happens when you take a stance on something like this. Something this controversial or this divisive, you're going to get backlash, man. It's just the way it is. Honestly, it's just the way it is. And this is such a defense mechanism, in my opinion. Like, he's so, and look, if this is what makes him feel better, okay, go ahead, go nuts. But I'm just telling you, in the long run, you're going to regret this because you're going to say, why didn't I just unplug? You know, just unplug, unwind. And because you have to at some point for your own mental, you know what I mean? For your own mental health, you have to unplug. KD needs to do the same thing. Just unplug. If you're too invested to the NBA, okay, fine. You want to keep watching that's all right. But you don't have to tweet about it. Like, just go away. I don't know, man. Like, I don't want to sound too cold, but I just think it's best. Like, after you've just been eliminated from the playoffs, just
be gone.
Walk away for a second, you know, regroup, and then come back when you're well and ready. Like, it's just that's the best course of action.
But that's just it, though. Like, he's you know, his stance of being the voice of the voices, and he wasn't anti-vax. Okay, great. But like, how about being the voice of someone who takes accountability? How about, you know,
you're right. I would love that 10 times more. If you just, even after being eliminated, saying like, look, we went through hurdles, you know, we went through this and that, and I didn't make things easier because like something like that, one little comment like that would go a long way for me. With Kyrie Irving taking accountability, but you're not going to hear that.
No,
you're not going to hear that.
He likes to spin it and make it seem like, oh, like I'm the one that's the victim here. I'm the one that's going through my journey, and no one understands that. Right. And it's just like, all right, man, you can't say or do things in the public eye, and then when you get asked about it, get upset.
Yeah,
like that's like he seems not to understand that, you know. And one guy who called him out is once again. And I say it once again because he did it with KD. TLNS's founder, Nick Gelso.
Oh, man. He said something again?
He responded to the tweet that I read earlier. And he says, how about go to work first? Then try to criticize the hardworking reporters who help you sell your empire of material crap by bringing attention to your wackadoo, this is exactly what he said, wackadoo behavior and poor example to young fans. You're dangerous. Trump plan media bashing is immature old.
You have to go to Trump, bro.
You're old. Hashtag karma. Hashtag sackbound.
Karma.
I don't know what that means. You think he's going to the Kings or I don't know.
Sackbound. Oh, that's probably one of the few teams that would trade for him. being honest. Maybe. I don't know. Maybe now they wouldn't. Maybe before they would have. But now they're like, oh, we're good.
Yeah, Brooklyn's got to take a deep look into if they want to keep doing business with Kyrie, because
But what's the alternative though?
But check out how a potential new deal would look like for Kyrie. Okay, because since his deal that he signed in 2019, when he bounced from Boston, he's only played in 47% of regular season games, right? But essentially, he can earn up to on a new 5-year deal. If he were to opt out this year, by that fifth year, he can earn potentially $58.1 million. Just to give you an example of how that new contract would look, the first year is $42 million, and it just keeps going on.
No.
Do you want to risk the future of this roster? Because KD, we know KD, he signed his extension last offseason. He's there for the next 4 years, unless he demands a trade. But for the most part, he's there for the next 4 years. Do you want to keep hitching your wagon to this dude? Something to think about.
I mean, if you're doing that with KD, it's up to KD. And I think those two go hand in hand right now. I do believe that, at least for another year. Now, moving forward, you have to make that decision. But that's a conversation you have to have with KD. Who's going to be the other guy? Mm-hmm. Who's the all-star you're going to bring in that's going to make up for that production? So, yeah, I mean, look, I just think the Nets – they have to kind of stick with this core, at least for the upcoming season. But in the meantime, they need to start figuring out the other pieces. You know what I mean? They need to start figuring out, the Bruce Browns of the world, who I believe is up as well.
Yeah, he's a free agent too. Yeah.
Like, man, you need someone like that. And if you're going to lose someone like that, if you're going to lose him, how are you making up that kind of production?
Which is looking like the best trade of the season for them. Not the Ben Simmons trade. The trading for Bruce Brown. Bruce Brown was in Detroit earlier in the
year. And you gotta remember too, Joe Harris has been out, so you get him back. You know, that's a shooter. Look, they just have to figure out, what are you gonna do with the guys who aren't making max money? How are you gonna develop them? You know, or do they even have a ceiling above them? To, you know what I mean? Like, you have to really start getting guys that have a window, that have a ceiling above them, that have growth potential. Because right now, the guys that you have, These aging stars, they're turning the other way, you know?
Agreed.
Yeah.
And in case you missed it, speaking of long-term contracts, most likely it will happen this offseason for the Denver Nuggets in terms of giving an extension to Nikola Jokic. And it's rumored that he could make upwards of $245 million, which would be the largest contract in NBA history.
Wow.
So, well, with Michael Porter Jr. coming back, with Jamal Murray coming back, that's a good core.
Yeah, running back.
Yeah,
if you're Denver, I mean, running back. You know, Phoenix is going to be in the mix, obviously, Golden State, but you're right in there. I mean, you're in that space. So this is your best chance to win a championship in the next couple of years here. That's going to be a heck of a story, because this is a guy who came a long way, you know, Jokic to who he is now, and most dominant big man in the NBA. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens with Denver. But that's wild. That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
that's a lot of dope.
Yeah. And that next series, because Denver got eliminated between Golden State and now Memphis, that should be an interesting series.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
That should be an interesting series.
Yeah, but man, these guys can never catch a break, man. The Nuggets, but
yeah.
That's the way it is in the NBA, it feels like. You know, it's not just the Celtics. Remember we say that, right? Every year it's somebody.
it's something.
Else. It's either Kemba, or it's Gordon, or it's Kyrie, or it's Isaiah.
Yeah, because peep that, because in the bubble, Denver made it to the Western Conference Finals.
Yeah.
I believe they got swept.
Yeah. Well, they had that grueling series when they came back against, because Utah?
Or was it Houston?
Was that them?
No, it was Utah. Yeah, Utah. Utah was up 3-1. Yes, you're right.
They blew a 3-1 lead.
Yep.
Donovan Mitchell was pissed.
Yeah, so here you are, you know, two seasons later, again, knocked out in the first round.
Yeah.
I remember Portland a few years back, man, the Western Conference Finals.
Yeah.
I believe they also got swept. They won one game in that one, and even make this playoffs this season. And you know, it's revolving doors sometimes with some of these teams and the bad luck that you gotta withstand and build yourself up afterwards. Look at the Phoenix Suns. How many years they weren't in the playoffs? Mm. In case you missed it, they're moving on, but Chris Paul turning back the clock.
Damn, man. That was a wild performance, man. Yo, 14 of 14.
Historic performance. 14. He's the first player in NBA playoff history. NBA history. To go 14 for 14. He didn't miss. 33 points in a wrap-up game. Held it down when Booker was out. And they're moving on. And they're going to play the Dallas Mavericks. that should be an interesting one.
Yeah, man. All these series are gonna be good.
And last but not least, in case you missed it, you know that new show on HBO, Winning Time, and it talks about the Showtime Lakers.
Yeah, great show.
Well, guess who's not happy about how he's being portrayed?
Everyone, but
but in particular,
Jerry West, bro.
Jerry West. Yeah. Jerry West has been complaining and saying that there's a lot of the stuff that's been talked about in the show or portrayed in the show is not factual. So guess what? HBO had to issue a statement in response to Jerry West's complaints and the way he's being portrayed. And quote, HBO has a long history of producing compelling content drawn from actual facts and events that are fictionalized in part for dramatic purposes. Winning Time is not a documentary and has not been presented as such.
Since when does it have to be facts? Like, that's the thing. Yeah, I'm not surprised.
However, the series and its depictions are based on extensive factual research and reliable sourcing, and HBO stands behind our talented creators and cast who have brought dramatization of this epic chapter in basketball history.
It's only entertainment.
To the screen. End quote. Like, bro. HBO's right. They didn't present this as a documentary. There's going to be some exaggerations for certain things.
This is Hollywood. Come on.
And it's exactly. So I don't understand why Jerry's getting his pains in a bunch. But I've seen a couple episodes. Great stuff.
Yeah, I like it.
You know, as a Celtics fan, you know, you're curious about that time.
I just can't wait for the next season because Max got to be all in it. I mean, he's already been in it. They've been mentioning him, you know, Cornbread, oh, that damn Cornbread, I can't stand, or something like that, West says. And they're in the 1979-80 season, so you know what happens in the following season. So,
yeah.
That NBA Finals, I'm sure he's going to be in it big time. We're going to try to get the guy who's playing him. Hopefully, we try to get him on the show. That would be fun. But, yeah, man, the show's awesome. I think it's going to lead to other documentaries, too, about the 80 Celtics. I'm sure that's going to be coming up in the next couple of years or so. But I'm loving this whole, like, generation of just looking back at the past and stuff. I mean, I guess it's always been going on, but I feel like when it comes to NBAs in particular, like the 80s stuff, like we didn't get a whole lot of that. I know the last decade we sort of did with that 30 for 30, just about the Lakers Celtics rivalry, but I want more stuff like this. Like even if it's like these mini series that only run for one season, like yeah. I want to see like the Celtics story. And I want to see like, you know,
like more in depth,
and like, yeah. That type of where it's not just like a documentary, it's scripted and got characters and stuff. Because they did a good job with this. You know, the whole like 80s feel to it, the cinematography behind it, like the way it's shot, it's really good. It's good stuff from HBO.
Some of these actors too that they've gone to portray these characters. I think for the most part they've been spot on.
Magic's
physical wise,
Magic's really good. Yeah. Magic, Kareem. As I can imagine, he's probably not happy about the way he's portrayed. But it's
part of my life I really don't like to talk about. But yeah, but yeah, I mean, there's gonna be a multiple season. That'd be great. So that's on HBO. Right, check that out. And yo, before I forget, happy birthday to us, Causeway Street Podcast.
Yes,
this week
it's the first, right?
It's the first,
man.
May 1st. That's when our premiere episode dropped back in 2014. You know what we were talking about in that episode? We're talking about Don Sterling.
Yeah. I always remember that.
Like, Don
that's
Sterling.
That's how we started.
You know, having to sell his team. And we were in the middle of the playoffs. And, you know, and here we are almost 300 episodes later. And, yep. And you know, it's been one hell of a ride so far. You know what I mean? You know, shout out to Ducha. Who's,
yes. But, yo, Sean couldn't join us. He's actually in the health and safety protocols right now.
So there you go.
We'll let him tell his side when he gets back. But yeah, man, it's been a heck of a run. Causeway Street, I know 300 is coming up soon.
Coming up soon.
So that's going to be special. But yeah, man, one heck of a run, guys. We can't say thank you enough, man, for the support, ongoing support, and this journey, this ride we've been on, man. We'll see where we'll see what's next for Causeway for sure.
And if this is the first episode you're listening to, welcome. You have 290 some odd episodes to look back on.
Yeah, where you been?
I know, right?
What you doing? What podcast you been listening to before us?
And we're still going strong, baby. So
that's right.
We appreciate it. All right, that's going to do it for this edition, this playoff edition of In Case You Missed It. Follow us on all social media platforms at Causeway Street. Again, I can't stress enough. Check out our Snapchat. Sway's going on the road when the team goes to Milwaukee next week. You know what to do. It's good. We got good content going up on there. All right.
Yes, definitely. And check out the Patreon if you guys haven't signed up yet, man.
After hours, baby.
Man, some funny, funny ass stories coming from us. The After Hours show, of course, my own podcast, 101 with Joe Sway. If you haven't checked it out, my conversation with Leon Poe. Man, that was fun talking to him about the 08 team and telling stories of KG. This is right before KG night, so that was cool catching up with him. But I'm going to have some another episode coming up soon. Sound from Brooklyn, actually. I got a chance to sit down with Grant Williams for a few minutes. I spoke with Jaylen Brown. It was a really fun trip, man. Brooklyn is fun. It was quick.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I was trying to tell Sean, Brooklyn is a good place to go to.
Yeah, it is. You know? It is, man.
Unfortunately, the basketball team is what it is.
I know, right? And the locals know what's up too. They know that it's not all good, you know, between their core, but they're hoping for brighter days in the future. But yeah, it was a great trip. It was fun, and I got a lot of fun sound from it. Great conversations that I had with a couple of Celtics players. So check that out coming up this week. And of course, another brand new episode of After Hours, patreon.com/causeway.
Hell yeah.
Just subscribe.
And check us out on causewaystreet.com for all your Celtics playoff coverage. We just had Zach on. He's one of our writers. So keep up to date on your Celtics news, rumors, and opinions. All right. And as always, Black Lives Matter. Let's stop aging hate. Let's pray for peace in the Middle East as we stand with the Ukraine. Until next time, we are out.